Welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism, audio show number 35. My name is Brian Shell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text, as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes, on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Send in your questions, comments, suggestions, and thoughts to me at dailybuddhism@gmail.com. So this week I have a few short announcements. Do you like this podcast? Well, you're listening, so I assume you do. If you do, you can help out by putting up a good review for the show at iTunes. You don't need to write anything lengthy or complex, just a sentence or two. And I've added a special link to the website to make this easier for you to do. Just go to www.dailybuddhism.com/iTunes. And if you have iTunes installed on your computer, it'll automatically open up and find the show on the iTunes store. And then you could just enter a review right there. I appreciate it, and so might other potential listeners. And a reminder for you, all the articles and posts you hear about on this show go out in our free daily email and are also posted on the Daily Buddhism website. Many readers go to the website and post their own comments and ideas on the topics there. So don't just listen to me here on the show. Stop in and read the comments on the website. Many readers add some very insightful comments to what I have to say. Okay, let's see. Over the past few months, I've had a few people ask about the theme music from the show. Well, the theme music is not something from a CD that you can go out and buy. It's a short sound clip included with GarageBand, the software I use to make the show. If you have GarageBand, the clip is called Shogun. And just for those who have asked, I will play the entire clip for you at the end of this show, so stay tuned after the closing. Please keep your questions coming in, whether by email or phone, but please be aware, however, that I'm starting to build up a little backlog, and I might not get to your question the same week you send it in. Personal messages or something that sounds urgent, I'll answer you right away by email, as always. But questions for the show are starting to stack up. I will answer every single question eventually, but some of them are going to take a little time to get to. Be patient. And on the subject of questions, I mentioned last week that if you phone in your question and I use it on the show, you'll win a free month of the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. And I gave away a month subscription last week, and I have another for someone this week, and I've already got a call for next week. But more is always good. Call in with your questions at the voicemail line at 937-660-4949. And now, on with this week's show.
Hi, Brian. My name is Eric from Annapolis, Maryland. My question is a revisit to Buddhist dietary philosophy. The general consensus is that meat eating is shunned because it brings harm to animals. But is this bad karma that's generated for the meatpacking people, or is it for those who eat the end products, or both? I have heard stories of mendicant monks who will eat meat if that is what is placed in their begging bowls, and they are still grateful for it. In fact, there's also a passage in Dinty Moore's book, The Accidental Buddhist, that even the Dalai Lama eats meat, which, admittedly, when I read it, it was pretty mind-blowing. Nonetheless, as a relatively new Buddhist, I was hoping that perhaps you could elaborate a little more on both sides of this story while I try to decide for myself. Thank you for your help, and thank you for the work you do on this podcast.
And as I promised last week, Eric has won a free month subscription to the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. Eric, drop me a note by email or call back with your email address and I'll set you up with that. And thanks for the great call. Anyway, we've discussed this topic several times in the past, but it just keeps coming back. The question seems to be especially confusing to newcomers to Buddhism. And it's good that it keeps coming up, because it's one of the most common misconceptions about Buddhists. Many beginners and outsiders see Buddhists as super pacifists who would rather suffer greatly than step on a bug. And I think the media has a lot to do with this. But it really is a complex situation, and there's plenty of debate on the topic. And that debate's been going on for thousands of years. First, let's look at the arguments for vegetarianism. The first precept states that you cannot kill or take life. And this is the primary argument for vegetarianism. That being said, everything you eat was alive at some point, even plants. So where do you draw the line between eating living things you can eat and those that you cannot? Most people would say that it depends on whether the animal was sentient or not. How do you define sentience? That's a major can of philosophical worms, and whole libraries have been written on that subject, Buddhist and otherwise. Is a dog or a cow self-aware? Do they have the Buddhist equivalent of what we call souls in the West? The ideas of samsara, or the cycle of rebirth, would seem to say that they do. So is it right to eat a being that could possibly be the reborn version of a family member? Yuck. And then there are arguments against vegetarianism. Everything dies. Death is a part of the cycle of life. One animal dies in order that others might live. Animals kill animals all the time, for food and for other reasons. Does that make them evil or damage their karma? No. That's just the order of nature, the way things are. You cannot keep from killing in life. You could kill hundreds of insects just by driving a car down the street. Killing is unavoidable. The only thing you can do is be aware of this and be mindful of your killing and try not to kill when it can be reasonably avoided. Many stories also say that Buddha himself ate meat and encouraged monks to eat whatever they were given in their begging bowls, as you said in your question. So, there is a lot of confusion and debate on the topic. Many people say that the prohibitions against eating meat was added long after the Buddha's day by monks in monasteries who wanted to make life more stringent and ascetic for their monks. Others say that the prohibition was there all along and was removed by monks who liked to eat meat and wanted to change the rules. I don't know of any definitive answer to this. It's just something that's been continually debated pretty much forever. The bottom line: the majority of Buddhists are not vegetarians. Whether this is right or wrong is up to you to decide, and that there is no absolute official answer on the subject. I will refer you to a couple of articles that I have written on this in the past. I have links in the show notes for this episode. Topics are called Are Buddhists Vegetarians? And another one on the First Precept, and another called Buddhist Dog Food. Again, there are links on the show. And then the first of two book reviews this week. This one is called The Method of No Method, The Chan Practice of Silent Illumination, by Chan Master Sheng Yan. It is published by Shambhala this year, 2008, 152 pages, and as usual, there's a link to buy from Amazon in the show notes. Someone a few weeks back lamented their inability to go on a retreat. This book is a perfect solution to that situation, as it's essentially a retreat in book form. I introduced Master Sheng Yan a while back when I reviewed his book, Footprints in the Snow. I was very impressed with that biography and wanted to learn more about his actual teachings. So when he released this latest book, I jumped on the opportunity to read it. And this book is basically a cleaned-up transcript of one of the week-long retreats that he offers. There are three main sections to the book. The Practice of Silent Illumination, Master Hongzhi's Discourse, the First Commentary, and also Master Hongzhi's Discourse, the Second Commentary. Master Hongzhi lived from 1091 to the year 1157, and was the first to write about the practice of silent illumination. Sheng Yan has deeply researched into this ancient master and teaches this old method today. The first section of the book is broken up into 7 days' teachings on how to practice silent illumination. Silent illumination, to put it probably too simply, seems to be a combination of empty mind meditation combined with the idea of being one with the environment. Sheng Yan gives several short talks each day, and each has a small section with that day's teachings. If you wanted to know what goes on in a retreat, this book is a clear way to see that without actually attending one. The second and third sections are also broken up into 7 days' teachings, but are more theoretical, explaining the original writings of Hongzhi in a modern way. Since this is basically a transcription of a real week-long seminar, there is some repetition, as the teacher reiterates some of what has gone before, but it's not overly repetitious. Actually, some of the expansions in the later days really clarify what silent illumination is really all about. Although practice and success at silent illumination is not an easy thing, the book is not complicated at all. There is some Buddhist jargon in the book, but whenever a new term is introduced, the word is marked with an asterisk to show that it's explained in the glossary. He explains the practice of meditation, how you actually physically do it, and explains that there are different stages in silent illumination, but that not all of them are necessary. You might choose to focus on one stage forever, or do them all. The book is reasonably short, but it did take me a good while to get through it, as there is a lot here to think about. My bottom line on this book is if you want to learn how a real master teaches real meditation and real theory in a real retreat setting, this is it. The language is easy and conversational. The ideas are not complex. Quite the opposite, in fact. Yet there's enough depth here that you could spend the rest of your life mastering it. And next up, we have another reader question. And this one writes in saying, "Hello, I've been following your podcast for a few days only. I'm quite intrigued and pleasantly surprised in all the information you provide, as it clears a lot of misconception I have myself about Buddhism. Further on this subject, I have been researching and doing some reading about Buddhism and its denominations. I would like to ask, which denomination would you say has the most positive outlook on life? The idea that the glass is half empty is usually associated with Buddhism, but I am wondering if there are any denominations which believe or act in a more glass is half full kind of idea." And my response: I think a lot of beginners get the same idea, that Buddhism is very pessimistic and negative. The main foundation of Buddhism, and usually the first things taught to new students, are the Four Noble Truths. Unfortunately, many teachers, myself included sometimes, simplify the First Noble Truth to say, all life is suffering. And yeah, that's very depressing. But it's not strictly accurate, though. Buddha, in the First Noble Truth, actually said, in life, there is suffering. In life, there is suffering. He later expanded this to include suffering during birth, aging, illness, death, association with unpleasant people and conditions, separation from loved ones, and pleasant conditions, and inability to possess what one desires. Well, yeah, everyone experiences those things. And they're obviously bad. But that in no way means all life is suffering. But regardless of the specific translation of the first truth, the majority of Dharma is about how to reduce and remove suffering. The Four Noble Truths are the foundation of Buddhism. But the Eightfold Path is the great beacon of hope that Buddhism offers. Whether it's meditation training to clear the mind and remove the jumble of confusing thoughts, or teaching Dharma to reduce attachment to material things and elusive ideas, it's all about removing suffering in yourself and others. Is there a lot of focus on suffering? Yes, but in the how do we eliminate it sense. If anything, I think Buddhism increases calmness, joy, compassion, peacefulness, clarity, empathy, love, and wisdom, while decreasing materialism, greed, hate, closed-mindedness, judgmentalism, deceit, self-delusion, and anxiety. With this mix, can the teachings be in any way pessimistic? No, I have to think it's the greatest message of hope that has ever been taught. And another question from a reader. I've been listening to the podcast since summertime, and I guess I'm a new Buddhist. What do I do about celebrating Christmas? Is that allowed? And my answer. Christians have Christmas. Jews have Hanukkah. People of African descent have Kwanzaa. And others celebrate the solstice or New Year. It seems that everybody has a holiday to celebrate except Buddhists, who don't get much of a December holiday. December 8th is Rohatsu, also called Bodhi Day, which is the anniversary of the day that Buddha became enlightened, sitting under the Bodhi tree. But that's on the 8th. It's pretty early in the month. So there really isn't anything really near Christmas. And there's nothing scriptural about this problem that I ever heard of. So it's pretty much just a matter of judgment. Here's my situation. I've been a Buddhist for more than a decade, and every year I put up a Christmas tree and bought and received presents every single year. I go with my niece and nephew to see Santa Claus, and recently went to see them both in their Christmas pageant. And it was a very well-done Christmas pageant, I have to add. I play Christmas music on the radio, at least until I can't take it anymore, and never fail to watch Charlie Brown's Christmas special and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer on TV. Last year in Japan, I even dressed up and played Santa for one of the kindergartens in Hiroshima. There's a picture of that on the website if you want to go see me in Santa costume. Now, I don't focus much on all the baby Jesus stuff, but I'm not one to get offended either. I realize that the majority of Americans are Christian, and I'm not about to deny anybody their choices. Fortunately, my extended family is not particularly religious, so it's not really a big issue at the big family party. I do all my traditional Christmas stuff, and I keep right on doing my regular Buddhist stuff as well. Again, there's no official answer on this, just my opinion. But it seems to me that if you've been raised with traditions that you're used to and comfortable with, stick with them. Changing is only going to cause needless suffering, and doing what you've come to love is a good thing. Much of the holiday season, anyway, is based on helping others, caring for the poor, donating to charities, goodwill towards men, peace on earth, and all these great other Buddhist concepts. Materialism and greed, going into debt, wild drinking parties, family fights, not so much. But remember the five precepts, and don't do anything that's going to cause any suffering this holiday season. Be mindful of what you're doing, but other than that, enjoy yourself. And there were plenty of readers that had opinions on this, so this is one of those ones you may want to go to the website and read the comment section to see what they do on Christmas. And then we had our second book review for the week. This one is called Quiet Mind, Open Heart, Finding Inner Peace Through Reflection, Journaling, and Meditation by Laura Wright. Published by Bristlecone this year, 2008, 256 pages, and yes, there is an Amazon link. The subtitle of this book is called Finding Inner Peace Through Reflection, Journaling, and Meditation. That combination of ideas is really an excellent summary of the point of the book. Reflection and meditation are subjects we've covered quite a bit here, as well as in most other Buddhist books. The interesting facet of this book is the emphasis on personal journaling. There are many meditation exercises and stories in here, but it's the journaling portion of the book that I'm going to focus on. Personal journaling, as most writers will know, is essentially a form of diary writing or personal essays that you write to yourself. The point of this is that if you take the time to write out and organize your thoughts, it will assist in the reflection part of it all and aid in meditation. And from my own experience, I can attest to this idea. One of the main reasons I like writing for the Daily Buddhism is that by explaining things to my readers, it helps increase my own understanding of these topics. Even if it's a subject I already know a lot about, just the act of writing it out helps me focus my ideas. And the author here explains that the book was written so that the sincere practitioners would have a method from going from a busy mind to a quiet mind. It weaves stories with reflective journaling exercises to give the reader excellent tools for unloading thoughts onto paper. and thereby emptying the mind and setting the tone for meditation. And as an example, here are some of the reflective journaling questions that follow a section on existential depression. These are things they ask the question, and you're supposed to write out some kind of an answer to yourself. How is existential depression a function of wisdom? What pragmatic views do you uphold, and how might softening your attitude allow for more beauty in life? How have you experienced impermanence? How do you see suffering in your own consciousness? What is selfishness, and what is selflessness? Can you accept that there is a knowing beyond logic? And those are some of the sample questions. There are no right or wrong answers, and no one is there to grade you. It's just a way for you to explore your own thoughts and ideas on a huge variety of themes. I definitely like the idea. By exploring ideas and putting your own thoughts down on paper, you can organize your own ideas and thoughts, which makes meditation less haphazard. Now, I have to admit that it's not for everyone. If you don't enjoy writing, there isn't that much here for you. If you do enjoy writing, then give this one a try. If you're already familiar with the ideas of journaling, or if you're already doing it, then absolutely pick this one up. And that's all for this week. Send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949 or post them in the comments section of any individual blog post on the website. The Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and there are a couple of donation buttons on the site as well. One for a one-time donation where you fill in the amount, and the other for a monthly contribution of $5. If you use the recurring donation button, or send in a one-time donation of $50 or more, you get a free subscription to the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism daily email is completely free. All you need to do for that is just go to the website and sign up. So stop by the website and look around, sign up for the mailing list, take some time to meditate, and I'll see you next week. But now, as promised, here is the full-length theme song for the show.